Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Ho, ho, ho.
Here's John Williams.
Remember, we're starting the show with a clip from a TV show, a movie, a song, something from the holidays that's one of your favorites, all the way until Christmas. This is John Williams. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio. We're here till 3 on Saturdays, 10 a.m. till 12 noon. Yabba dabba doo!
What I'm trying to say is, Rudolph, with your nose so bright, won't you guide my sleigh tonight?
It will be an honor, sir.
Rudolph the red-nosed reindeer.
Little Rudolph today.
We had a very shiny,
shiny red nose.
And if you ever saw it, you would even say it low. Used to laugh and call him a name. They never let poor Rudolph join in any reindeer game.
312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Say, hey, John, why don't you take a clip from this TV show, this movie for the holidays?
With your nose so bright, won't you guide my sleigh tonight?
And we'll feature it on the open of one of the hours of our show between now and Christmas. By the way, Brenda and I were sitting around this weekend. It was kind of dreary. We were busy visiting with some friends, had a real nice time, but I also found myself parked in front of the TV and looking to watch something, and I wasn't going to watch a Christmas movie. I thought, I'm going to start something. So you know what we queued it up to? Season 1, Episode 1, Game of Thrones.
Yes!
I was clicking around, and on HBO they said, you know, start your whole Game of Thrones extravaganza thing. And I thought, yeah, let's go.
Yeah, and what's nice about rewatching it is the parts that you might, the storyline you don't want to watch, you can just fast forward because you kind of know what happened.
Yeah.
Like I don't like that scary part with, like, that one guy.
There is so much in the first two episodes. Holy cow. No wonder that thing was a hit. That thing just hit the ground running. I mean, there is sex, violence, rock and roll. It's just like, let's go. Let's have a show, man. Boom. I mean, some of the things you remember noteworthily about that show happened like in the first 60 minutes of this thing. It's epic, but they just got going. So we're watching that. And it's also interesting, I thought you were about to say this, V, when you do watch it again, there's sometimes a line or a scene that you go, oh.
So much.
I know what that was about.
Especially when you rewatch the first ones, because I didn't even know who anyone was for the first season.
Right.
I'm like,
and they're throwing off clues. They're giving away stuff in the first two episodes
yeah.
that it's almost like they knew how it was going to end and were populating the first episodes with some clues.
I know, but at first I'm like, whose brother is who? I'm trying to figure out the whole thing. So now when you rewatch it, there's so many things you missed.
In just a minute, I'll play for you part of a conversation we had over the weekend with Clay Jenkinson. Clay is our Thomas Jefferson. He is our Teddy Roosevelt. He is also one of America's foremost scholars on presidencies. I don't know if you know that about our TJ and TR, but they don't just throw around Rhodes scholarships. He went on to receive a Medal of Arts. I forget exactly which one it was, but President Bush presented, George Herbert Walker Bush presented Clay Jenkinson an award at the White House years ago for his work in the letters about history and about presenting Thomas Jefferson. He presented it for him, in fact. So the two of them have just the briefest of histories. And when I asked Clay over the weekend on our Saturday show about what kind of presidency 41 represented, he had a really good answer. But maybe before we get that, let's just remind you that today's show, we'll try not to be too political. I recorded a podcast with Steve Cochran today. He does podcasts now. And in the podcast Steve's doing, he's interviewing various folks here from WGN Radio and elsewhere who you may know but might want to get to know a little bit better. Steve featured me today. Thank you, Steve. And in there, he and I were talking about politics and how, well, you know you have to talk about it. You also don't want to talk about it too much. If you do, we have the miracle cure.
It's Christmas time, but I'm not in the mood. I'm thinking immigration and trade and not about fun things like... Well, I can't even remember fun things.
We know what this is.
My soul feels like Charlie Brown's tree.
This is a classic case of politosis, that dreary feeling you get from too much politics.
I wish there was something I could take, you know, before noon.
Now there is. Eurylium Life 9000.
That's a vodka, too?
It's not a vodka.
Darn.
It's an all-new wonder drug, handcrafted by an ethnically blended group of serious-looking people wearing lab coats. In New Jersey.
I want to forget all this political news and...
It'll do that.
Lighten my mood.
It's inexpensive, easy to take, and will put a smile on your face.
Oh, it is vodka.
Take Eurylium Life 9000 as a pill, capsule, gel cap, IV, eye drop, nasal mist, ear burst, arm patch, tonic, colonic, seltzer. There's an all-new home epidural kit, and now take it as a gummy bear, candy cane, or sea salt briquette.
Should I take Eurylium Life 9000 if I'm pregnant or plan on getting pregnant? Like, who'd want to get pregnant these days? Did I say I'm kind of down right now?
Don't take it then.
I'll get a Eurylium Life 9000 mistletoe and hang it by the door.
Happy holidays from Eurylium Life 9000 and Eurylium Light 4500.
And some Cosmos. I'm still going to have my Cosmos.
Will you enjoy your Cosmos, Missy? That's Eurylium Life 9000 and now Eurylium Light 4500. The news click over the weekend asked you how you feel about the Cubs tendering a contract to Addison Russell, and 54% of you said you're glad they are doing that, and 46% of you wish the Cubs would just cut bait and leave Addison Russell to somebody else's, you know, opportunity. But he may end up playing for the Cubs, he may end up not, but they have not completely disassociated themselves with that, and you're kind of 50-50 on this. We'll talk to Mark Carman about that a little after 2 o'clock. Carm said something to us on Saturday's show that I think is helpful. He said that we don't have video of Addison Russell doing anything, but we do of Ray Rice. And we do of this halfback from the Kansas City Chiefs. I saw both of those videos a lot this morning. And frankly, I think those are two different things, by the way. But if there were video of whatever Addison Russell did, I think the conversation would go differently. That was Carm's observation. I think there's something to that, particularly since now I was watching the Ray Rice video and the other videos today on the TV news, and I thought, wow, when you see that, you make a judgment. When you don't, you know it's bad, but it's a different kind of thing. We'll talk a little bit about your results on the news click, and that will be after 2 o'clock. 773 texted us this. I knew a cranky 63-year-old's last name is Rudolph. When you played that song, I had a sudden traumatic third-grade flashback. John, the beauty of Game of Thrones is that they don't dumb it down with excessive explanation. They don't explain what and why things happen. It just flows. Yeah, so that's kind of what we're... So for Christmas, Brenda and I are going to start watching Game of Thrones all over again. Okay, let me just give you a little bit of what happened over the weekend, and you know that George Bush passed away. A lot has been said about him over the weekend. I think it's always helpful for us to pause and reflect, remember the good things without being blind to the maybe less than good things, but to reflect positively on some people. And 41, it's easy to do. When I thought about George Bush, some of the fun things that came to mind right away were his, wasn't it Bush that said he wasn't going to eat peas? Didn't Barbara want him to eat peas? Or no,
it was broccoli.
Was it broccoli?
I think it was broccoli.
And was it him or his son? Oh, my gosh, no. It was him. Was that not going to do it? You think of the Dana Carvey stuff. I mean, Lord, I saw a lot of Dana Carvey. SNL did a nice tribute to George Bush on Weekend Update over the weekend, too. I thought Saturday Night Live was not very good this weekend, by the way. The cold open sure wasn't, but I thought that it was nice to give a nod to his ability to laugh at himself. So here's Clay Jenkinson, the presidential scholar, the guy that portrays the presidents for us when we go on stage here at WGN Radio. And he was talking about the patrician kind of president he was.
He comes from a very old American tradition of the patrician president. And if you think of John Kennedy, patrician of a certain sort, FDR, certainly a patrician, Theodore Roosevelt. Then you head back, say, to John Adams and Thomas Jefferson and George Washington. The idea that we are something of a democracy, but it's in our interest to elect these people who are of a come from a higher station, of a higher level of education, a higher level of social access than the rest of us, in kind of the tradition of the patrician or the aristocratic president. Bush has a little of that in him. His son worked hard to kind of shed himself of that sort of an image. George W. wanted to be more of a populist, but Bush Sr. had that elegance of style, a tiny little bit of social aloofness. He certainly loved the decorum of the office. I think, you know, you were mentioning some of the his mottos. Here's another one that I read in the biography of President Bush. From his earliest childhood, he was taught always to share. So if you have a candy bar, you share it. If you get a bicycle for your birthday, you let your brothers and sisters ride it. And so his motto was, here, take half.
Oh, here, yeah, that's take right. Half-Half was
Isn't
his nickname.
Great?
Yeah.
Here, take half. And so if that were the way we all lived our lives, I mean, essentially that's a version of the Golden Rule. And he did live that life. But, you know, but as a historian, I just want to put in one little darker note. He was knee-deep in the Iran-Contra scandal of the Reagan years, and worked hard to keep himself from being drawn into that larger scandal. And it could easily have prevented his becoming president, and probably would have today with the kind of watchdog media attention that we get. And I don't think we should forget the Willie Horton ad against Michael Dukakis, which was race baiting, and it really helped to set the tone for some of the kind of ugly opposition research television hit ads that have become standard in our culture since. So George Bush occupies a kind of pivotal place, John. He was there for the fall of the Berlin Wall, and he said the noblest possible thing. He said, we're not going to crow, we're not going to boast, we're not going to lord it over the Soviet Union. We're going to be dignified about this, and he was. And that reminds me of Lincoln saying, we're not going to hit them when they're down.
Clay Jenkinson, that full conversation, I just thought Clay was so thoughtful and helpful. You know, you're looking for boxes to put people in, or feelings and how they resonate one versus the other. And I think he articulated nicely both sides of the big view of George Bush and his presidency. That's part of the podcast. If you go to the John Williams page, WGNradio.com, John Williams, there's podcasts of the show. That's from Saturday in our first half hour between 10 and 10:30. One quick note, too. Remember, when you go to WGNradio.com on the John Williams page, you'll also see a picture of me wearing a fancy Christmas outfit next to producer Elif. Click there and you can make a donation to our Salvation Army virtual kettle. By the way, Elif, we might do the new news click now. I see Kevin just walked into the sports office. I'm not sure if he's listening, but either way, you get to vote at WGNradio.com on the news click. It's also on my Facebook page. I'm WGN King John there. What's the new news click, Elif?
What did we learn about the Bears on Sunday? A, that we're fine. I'm not worried. B, that we're fine, but I'm a little worried. C, we're not that good after all.
Yeah. I'm a B on that one, I think. Do you guys all watch the football game? Go to WGNradio.com. Click on the news click. What did we learn? That we're fine. We're fine. That these things happen. We didn't have our starting quarterback. Or B, that we're fine. But, you know, that was a wake-up call. Glenn Kozlowski in the post-game show, which is really fun after the Bears game. I don't know if you're listening to the Bears on another radio station or watching them on TV, but put our post-game on afterwards. Because for one thing, while the other radio station is just dilly-dallying and not doing anything, our guys dive right in. They go, okay, that happened, boom. Here's what you, now you've got analysis and volume and emotion. And the guys were just on it. But Glenn Kozlowski said, you know, we're okay. I think Glenn, I don't mean to speak for you, Glenn, but I think Glenn's analysis would have been, we're fine, I'm not worried. He virtually said that. I would say we're fine, but I'm a little worried. How would you analyze the Bears after that loss? What a fun, you got to admit, that was a fun game. You cannot believe, and by the way, I was listening to it on the radio because we were driving around, we're heading to a party or whatever, and the Bears radio team were had that game written off. And of course, who'd have thunk that, you know, we'd get a field goal and then recover the onside kick and then score a touchdown. I mean, it was unlikely. But usually the hometown announcers are like, but we've still got a chance or whatever. No, they were talking about packing their bags and getting to the airport on time. They were done. They were real happy that we made it to overtime, but they had checked out. So what's your answer to that? You can go to WGNradio.com or on my page. Incidentally, this isn't our top story. V. Elif, what's your opinion about this? Priyanka Chopra and Nick Jonas got married over the weekend.
Yeah.
I don't know much about either of them. She's beautiful. He's Nick Jonas. He's one of the Jonas Brothers, and he's handsome enough. Anyway, they got married. Yeah, I'm happy for him. It's a four-day ceremony because they did it once in his tradition and then once in the Hindu tradition of her country. So it's one of these long, evolved, multi-day things. But I'm reading about the gifts they got. She registered on Amazon for blenders and turntables and flatware. Shouldn't there be a point where if you're rich and famous enough, you don't go on Amazon and register for stuff? Like, if I'll bet they're worth millions of dollars. It's funny. Like, she says, I really like music. I would like a turntable.
Go buy yourself a turntable.
And so the one she registered for is the C6 Belt Drive Turntable by Crosley for $144. I don't understand that. I can't believe she doesn't have a $144 turntable or a $12 million turntable, right? So what are you guys doing here? That strikes me as being redundant or silly, or it strikes me as being an ad. That's just an ad for Amazon. This isn't a real gift registry. This is them just advertising for Amazon.
I don't think there's anything wrong with them requesting stuff or building a registry, because they, just like everybody else, should be able to build a registry.
Everybody else who builds a registry needs a turntable and flatware.
Yeah, but
they don't. Maybe they do, but I'll bet they don't.
I don't think that's up to us, though.
The thing is, if you're old enough to get married, you should be old enough to stock your own house. In my opinion, like,
wait,
I don't.
You don't believe in gift registry for gifts at all?
I've never bought a gift. Like, I just give people money.
Money.
Or because you're really just paying for your plate.
If you got married next year, wouldn't you like and need new towels?
No, I don't want to know that the towels came from, like, Aunt Margie or whatever.
What do you mean? They came from Target. She bought them because you said you liked the towels at Target. You don't want the gifts?
I don't think I do.
I'm not arguing against gift registries. I'm arguing against millionaires asking people to get them towels and flatware. That just, to me, seems... And put it this way, though. Suppose you're one of their best friends, and they're getting married. Yay! Well, maybe they actually want to give them something, their friends. So what do they give them? I understand this, but I don't know. There's just something weird to me about her asking for a Cuisinart food processor or the all-clad cookware. I just kind of think these rich people probably already have all-clad cookware, or maybe even better than that. The more I look at this list, the more to me it looks like an Amazon commercial, because it's pages of things that you can get through Amazon.
But did you see what it said at the bottom of that list?
About the donation to UNICEF?
Yeah.
Okay, so Amazon has also made a $100,000 donation to UNICEF, a charity that is extremely important to me, she said. So
you're right. This was an advertisement for fun things you can get people on Amazon.
This is Oprah's list.
Yeah.
That's what this is.
She guaranteed is not getting that stuff.
Yeah, but the all-clad, it's really worth the money.
I mean, really. So what if people went out? They got friends. What if people all started gifting them with $149 turntables, which are fine turntables, but I mean, what if they got what are they going to do with that? They're going to give it to UNICEF?
They're going to re-gift it to someone.
You're right. Everything on this list is going to be wrapped and given again. One other note about the wedding gifts for the rich. John, millionaires don't need those glitzy Oscar swag bags either, but they love getting free stuff. I suppose that's true. If I became rich, I would still like, oh, that is so awesome. Thank you.
He still has an Aunt Edna who's got to show up at the ceremony with something.
John, rich people also have rich friends. So why deny them a registry? We have friends who got married who registered for a $4,000 couch, which is more ridiculous than a record player. Yeah, I think you can also ask for too much, right? Like something that's too expensive. Like, oh, yeah, but what if somebody just wanted to give us a $4,000 couch? You know, the other weird thing is that, like, you can put money in an account that they will then use at a gym or at a restaurant, too. There's all kinds of ways for people to give to people. And I'm not passing judgment on any of that per se. I just think it's weird when rich people register for flatware.
John, if this ever comes up, I don't think you want to give a bride a gift certificate to a health club on her wedding day. Okay, put that one in your back pocket.
I will second that.
Writing that down.
This is a third.
John, okay, all right, already. 630 said, it's nice to have gift ideas for relatives or friends who don't have a zillion dollars, which is really what that list is. Here's a good idea. Listen to this now. On a phone line is Ron Charles. He's the Washington Post book critic. I say give a book. I have books on my list for a lot of people this year. Ron, you're on WGN Radio. How are you?
And, you know, most books are less than $4,000.
Imagine that. Think of all the books you could get for $4,000.
Yeah, I would say 80.
a lot. Are you an 800? Old school guy? Do you like the hardback or the paper version, or do you read them digitally?
I've tried, but I have to have the book in front of me. You know, I have to turn the pages. Yeah.
And make notes. I don't know if other people do this, but I...
Exactly.
I underline things, highlight things, notes about it, you know, as...
Yeah.
Well,
that's been my problem. I mean, I've tried, but no, I have to have the book.
I'm glad to hear that. At WashingtonPost.com, you can find your lists. There's several of them. Best books of the year. You've got them in categories. We'll plow through some of them here. Do you mind?
No, not at all. It's what I love to do.
Best books of 2018. So hit me with a couple. What jumps out if I said that?
I think one book your readers might like is called A Place for Us by Fatima Farin Mirza. It's a really beautiful story about a Muslim family in California dealing with trying to acculturate to America, trying to deal with the kids, you know, who want to live in a different way than the parents. I really learned a lot about the Muslim faith and about what it means to be an American. I thought it was just beautifully done, and the author isn't even 30 years old.
Wow. I'm looking at your review of that here. Or the review of it that you've shared. You also, I was glad to see, have Susan Orlean's The Library book in on the list. She was in our studio not that long ago, and we're all fans of hers here. And that's really an interesting, quirky book, isn't it?
Isn't she a delight? Yeah, the New Yorker writer, Susan Orlean. That is a really wonderful book. If you know anyone who loves books or is a bookish person, they'll enjoy this. It doesn't matter, man or woman. It's a true crime story about a fire that destroyed something like a million books in 1986 in L.A. And Susan goes after this crime and who might have started it and just digs into the whole mystery of what happened that day, you know, to destroy so many valuable books. But then every other chapter, after she looks farther back and starts to investigate, how did we get libraries in America? You know, where did they come from? And she even profiles some early American librarians, and they're really, as you might expect, quirky, funny, smart, strange people. I just thought it was a delight.
Yeah, that's The Library book by Susan Orlean. One Person, No Vote, How Voter Suppression is Destroying Our Democracy. Did you include a lot of political books in your list?
Yeah, we do, because you might expect. Readers of the Washington Post are very interested in politics here in the nation's capital, so we're pretty attentive to political books and biographies of political figures, that sort of thing. This is a fascinating book, and of course, it was of much discussion during the last election. How have laws since the Voting Rights Act of 1965, how have laws been structured to keep certain groups of people from voting or from getting to the polls or from making them feel like they can't vote and participate in democracy? This is one of those books that you read and you just are filled with anger and maybe even a little despair about, you know, the greatest democracy on earth that still can't seem to figure out how to conduct elections.
By the way, we'll get to fiction in a second, but since we're on that topic, then let's just look at the 50 notable works of nonfiction and the top 10 that you all posted. Air Traffic, A Memoir of Ambition and Manhood in America. Now, I haven't read this one. What's this one about?
I'm switching over here as fast as I can. Oh, The Memoir by the Poet. Yes, this is a wonderful book by Gregory Pardlow. His father was laid off by Reagan during the air traffic controller strike, and he writes about the effect that had on his life and his father's life. And, you know, he's this wonderful award-winning poet, and here he is turning to the subject of what it was like to grow up in that home. It's a very beautiful book, and a lot of readers will enjoy that, I think.
Hmm. The Apprentice, Trump, Russia, and the Subversion of American Democracy by your colleague Greg Miller, who jumped on with us again the other day. I've read a lot of these books. I told him this last week, and I'll tell you, of the political books I've read this season, I think his may be the best. The reporting, the research on that is amazing, and he's a good storyteller, too.
Yeah, we have the best political reporters here, and Greg is one of them. And, you know, sometimes you can feel overwhelmed with the daily stories about the Russia crisis or controversy and Trump and what's going on, and you just feel like you'll never figure it out. A book like this lays it out for you and explains it. It's invaluable right now if you're feeling overwhelmed, as I think many of us are.
And it's just fascinating. I mean, so, like, how do we know who hacked who, when, and what? And, like, he's like, oh, no, the CIA, I think it was watching hackers hack, and they still do sometimes without exposing them so that they can see who they are, what they're doing, and how they're doing it. And a lot of this was going on during the election. And then the questions are, who do you tell? When do you tell them? What do you tell them? What do they do with that information? What if they don't do anything with that information? And it feels like it could have been written yesterday. The book is called The Apprentice, Trump, Russia, and the Subversion of American Democracy. You also include a book that I really enjoyed this year, Bad Blood, the story about Theranos. What an amazing story that one is, right?
And we just posted a story about Bill Gates' favorite books of the year, and that is one of them.
Okay. That's by, who wrote that? John Carreyrou. And it's about Theranos, and what's the woman's name that started the company? Oh, Elizabeth something. But it's about the company Theranos. It's about all of the promise homes. It's about all of the promise that it had, but what a scam ultimately it turned out to be. That book is called Bad.
Yeah, and it turns out. And it turns out to be about American business and the stock exchange and the way we approve drugs. It seems like it's just about one company, but it's actually about a whole system that we live under.
Yeah, no kidding. Give me another book you like from the list of notable books in 2018, nonfiction.
Nonfiction. My wife has been reading Educated to Me. And it is so good. This is a memoir by Tara Westover, another one of, it's also a favorite of Bill Gates. She was raised by Mormon survivalist parents.
Oh, yeah.
Way off the grid. She ends up going to Harvard and Cambridge and getting a PhD. And she writes about, you know, the experience of coming into knowledge, of coming into, you know, modern society and living with these people and still loving these people who sometimes behave in really terrible ways. It's just a fascinating story. True story.
And that book has been on the list, on the bestseller list, all year long. It's been, keep seeing that and keep thinking I've got to get to it, and I haven't. So I will dig into that one. Have you gotten through Michelle Obama's book yet?
I have not, but boy, many people have. We wrote a story on Friday that she'd sold 2 million copies in the last 15 days.
Yeah, she sold one to me, and I may have bought it. It's a good book. It's, you know, and listen, I'm in Chicago. Not that, and she and I are of similar age, not that I have a lot in common with Michelle Obama, and I sure didn't grow up on the South Side, but as a person who cares deeply about Chicago, I'm really glad to see her write about the city from her perspective. So while it's a great story about her and Barack, et cetera, if you're a Chicagoan, I think you will enjoy this book, regardless of your politics. Easier for, you know, Obama's and fans and Democrats to enjoy it, but you'll enjoy it from the telling of a story about Chicago.
Yeah, she has very, very broad appeal. Now, she was in Chicago, right? She did an appearance there.
Yeah, she and Oprah sold out the United Center. And they didn't even play.
You didn't get a ticket?
I did not.
No ticket?
I did not. How about we skip over to fiction for a second and tell us some of the books on the fiction side that you've enjoyed this year? Maybe if folks are getting here's a recommendation or two. In fact, let's do this. Elif said, take a quick break, so let's just pause briefly. If you've got a book that you loved or want to know about, 312-981-7200. But we're just looking at the list from the book's editor at the Washington Post, Ron Charles. And 312-981-7200 is the number. We got just a couple more minutes, but let's continue to spend them with Ron Charles, the Washington Post book critic. They've got a nice list of, in a variety of categories, books that you might want to read or give as gifts. Now that we're here in December. And I was asking you about some fiction, Ron. What jumps out to you on the fiction side?
Gary Steingart has a very funny, moving book called Lake Success about a hedge fund manager whose career is collapsing, who's got troubles with his marriage, and so he jumps on a bus and decides to go find an old girlfriend. It's a pretty funny, moving book about a guy trying to figure out who he is.
I like the sound of that. Can you give me another one?
The Great Alone by Kristen Hanna. Really exciting story about a young girl. I think she's 14. Her family moves to Alaska, and they're going to, you know, start again and enjoy the outdoors. But the dad has a drinking problem. He has some psychological problems, and they are not at all prepared for the winter up there, and it goes really, really badly. Very exciting story, The Great Alone.
Wow. What about thrillers? You got anything on that side for folks that like the page-turners?
Yeah, a guy named Nico Walker, who's still in prison for bank robbery, has written a story about his life called Cherry. And it's fictionalized, but he pretty much tells the story of what it was like to be a drug addict, to go to Iraq, to come home, and to have to start robbing banks to feed his habit. It's a remarkable story by a guy who, you know, lived it.
I'm turning pages here. Oh, yeah, The Reckoning by John Grisham. You guys liked that, didn't you?
Yeah, it's amazing. He book after book, you know, the guy really does a great job.
Yeah, I was thinking, oh, maybe they're past that. Like, you guys won't include that because that's a little, you know, too easy. But
no,
I'm glad to see a John Grisham book's on
if
the
he's,
list.
If he's good, sure, exactly. There's another one by a woman named Tayari Jones. Readers might know this because Oprah has been talking about this. She wants to make a movie out of it. It's called An American Marriage. It's about a black couple that gets married, and pretty early in their marriage, the husband is accused of rape and imprisoned, but we know he didn't do it. And so this couple has to deal with what does it mean to be apart for 10 years. The husband's in prison. The wife is trying to, you know, keep herself together on the outside. Very exciting story, An American Marriage by Tayari Jones.
You'll just see the full list. I don't have time to go through them all or ask you about them all here, but Children of Blood and Bone, Conscience, Crudo, The Female Persuasion, Flights, some of these you've mentioned already, Florida, French Exit, Fruits of the Drunken Tree, There, sure sounds like an intriguing, you know, idea for.
Yeah, I love that book.
I didn't know about that one, but it's set in Oakland,
California.
Well, he's
brand new.
Yeah. Go ahead, tell me just a little bit about that.
He's a debut author. He's a Native American, and he writes this incredible novel about Native Americans who live around Oakland, California, and are trying to live their lives. Some are doing okay. Some are not doing well at all. And the whole thing centers around this powwow at the Oakland Coliseum that's coming up. And, you know, some of them think of it as a real spiritual moment and retreat, but others are planning a terrible crime, and they all come together in a spectacular conclusion. That's called, it has an odd title, There, by Tommy Orange.
Wow. Hey, this is fun, and it's maybe something you and I should do a little more often. We talk to a lot of authors on this show. I read a few books and share details of them with my listeners, but maybe you and I should put our heads together once in a while.
I would enjoy that anytime, please.
Ron, well done. Remember, go to WashingtonPost.com. What's the / on that? I guess just search books for you guys, huh?
Yeah, search books. It's pretty deep under entertainment.
Follow Ron on Twitter. He's got a great Twitter feed, too.
Oh, there's Steve Bertrand. Okay.
No, thank you.
All right. It's all good to
thank
know.
You.
Thanks for your time, Ron. Well done.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
But we do.
Here's John Williams.
Every day, remember, on social media, it's WGN King John. We're on weekdays till 3. Don't miss the Mincing Rascals podcast. Judge this year best podcast in Chicago, The Mincing Rascals.
What I'm trying to say is, Rudolph, with your nose so bright, won't you guide my sleigh tonight?
It will be an honor, sir.
Rudolph the red-nosed reindeer.
Everybody.
They had a very shiny,
shiny red nose.
And if you ever saw it, you would even say it. I love the earth, the reindeer. Used to laugh and call him.
There's probably a transition here.
They never let poor Rudolph join in any reindeer.
You know, Rudolph was the leader, but the other eight reindeer, they really couldn't play ball. And so they had to get rid of them. No, that doesn't work. Mark Carman is in our studio from WGN Sports.
Hi, John. I was going to start singing, but I didn't want to ruin everything, so I stopped myself.
It's a nice version of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Thank you, Blenders. That's the name of the group, The Blenders. Kevin Powell's down the hall in Sportsland, too. Guys, our news click, there's a few things in the news. Fred Hoiberg's dismissal, one of them, the Bears game last night. Actually, the reason that I asked you to come in, Carmen, I'd be happy to have your thoughts on this, too, Kevin, was on Saturday we spent a little time talking about the news click, our daily web poll question at WGNradio.com. We asked how you feel about the Cubs tendering a contract to Addison Russell. And for the record, 54% of you are saying I'm glad that they're doing that, and 46% don't want to have anything to do with Addison Russell in our unscientific online survey. But you said something at the end of our conversation on Saturday that I think is worth thinking about, and that was what?
That's a miracle that I did that. Are you talking about the video part of it? Is that what you're saying? Yeah. Well, right. If there was a video of what Addison Russell allegedly did with Melissa Wrighty or anybody else for that matter, then I think the narrative changes around Addison Russell. That 54% maybe goes to 4%.
If it's a Ray Rice type thing.
Absolutely.
Okay, but what's the name of the halfback for the Chiefs?
Kareem Hunt.
So you've seen that video?
Yeah, TMZ released that out of where he was living in Cleveland.
Compare that video to the Ray Rice video.
Ray Rice is worse. Ray Rice is a Mike Tyson shot to the face. This is him barreling through his friends and trying to push, who he claims, by the way, he just met that day. The worst part about that video is as she's on the ground, he comes back and he kicks at her. That was the worst part. But Ray Rice is definitely...
He kicks at her. Yeah. It's all bad. He didn't kick her as hard as... I mean, when you watch the video... It's bad.
It's atrocious.
It's not as bad as I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, that's right.
Isn't that a terrible thing to say? But I guess there's levels of abuse, and this was a guy who was out of control, angry, but wasn't as physically abusive as Ray Rice was, for instance.
Yeah, I don't know if you watched the Lisa Salter's interview with Kareem on Sunday, but you know, she tough interview to do. But I would just like to know, were you drunk? Not that it excuses it, by the way, but just to get to mindset at the time, to do what he was doing, trying to barrel through people to get at someone who he apparently met that day. I mean, if that's of normal mind sense, then that's way worse to me, even though it's all bad. This is,
When you watch this video, too, of this player for the Kansas City Chiefs, he looks like a halfback for the Kansas City Chiefs. He is a square pile of muscles. He looks strong and fast, and he's angry, and he's out of control. And as he's going after this woman, two of the people that intervene, one is another woman, a young woman who, is outmatched, and then another guy who is clearly outmatched. But they were getting in between the two of them and grabbing this guy and trying to push him back into the hotel ballroom or wherever the party was, whatever the heck was going on. They were trying to separate him, and I thought, God bless those people. That took a little... courage. He could have killed him.
Yep, no doubt. That's not something that you ever want to get in front of, and a lot of people would run there, and they were trying to do their very best to defuse the situation. So
manage that situation. So now the Chiefs said, okay, we can't have that.
Yeah, but I wonder, did they cut him because of what he did or because he lied to them? That's a big question that needs to be asked. It's similar to the Addison Russell situation. Addison Russell lied to the Cubs. He did. Because he admitted in his statement on Friday that, he was apologizing for his actions. Well, what are you apologizing for? When we talked to the Cubs the day all this news came out last summer, August, September,
yeah.
They said Addison has stood by that he didn't do anything wrong.
And I think the lying part is another part to it, but end of the day, if the video doesn't come out, Kareem Hunt's still with the Kansas City Chiefs, right?
Yeah.
And to your point, if we saw what Addison Russell is accused of, we might have a different attitude about this, which is, in a way, kind of unfair, right?
It really shouldn't matter. I actually think what the Cubs are doing could be sort of the new playbook for this. You are suspended. You are not playing. We are going to pay for you to get treatment, extensive treatment, because this happened on our watch. And then we'll see what happens after a period of time where you're at.
And we'll see if we could trade you.
Yeah, sure.
No, they're not saying that, but they're saying all the right things to make him more of an attractive option for other teams.
Right, or we're going to release you then, too, and not trade you, but at least we've done our part to help you with your rehab.
Yeah, it was Friday. John and I were talking Friday afternoon, and we were going to go with the Reuben Foster conversation, and then, boom, the Kareem Hunt news comes.
That's the
and
Chiefs
all
guy.
The Kareem, and then all this news is coming the day the Cubs decide to give a contract to Addison Russell, or at least a day after the Addison Russell. It's just
what does this
wild.
Mean? The tender a contract? Can you make that in layman terms understandable to me?
So they're arbitration eligible. Which,
don't know what that means.
Okay, so the Cubs have the right to offer the contract, which is or not
to Addison Russell, but nobody else does.
Right, and so. And then the salary is pretty much determined based on your performance. So they can tender you, and then we're going to pay you this amount. They're not free agents, so they're going to get what their contract is slot. Now, if they non-tender him, which was not what they did, then he's a free agent and can sign with whoever. So it's collectively bargained that you're under team control for the first, I want to say,
six years. Then after your third season, you become arbitration eligible. And basically, that allows you, if you're... Like for Chris Bryant example, he won an MVP, and instead of getting paid like legal minimum, they go to an arbitration situation, which they say, okay, whoa, we're not going to pay you $1 million. You just won the MVP. Let's pay you $10 million here, essentially. And if you tender a contract, it basically means you're keeping them from hitting free agency.
Well, how hypocritical does it or does it not appear when a team says, okay, we're going to try and help this young man rehabilitate, when in fact what they're really trying to do is... keep him on the team because he's good or improve his value so that we can get more money for him. It's not about him or even the woman. It's about the team and the money.
So that's interesting with everybody you've mentioned because Ray Rice was at the end of his career, was done. Really no real appeal there as far as on the field. Kareem Hunt's basically entering his prime. So more likely that he gets another chance. Addison Russell, though, to the Cubs' point, valuable to a point, but he's not Chris Bryant, he's not Anthony Rizzo, he's a guy that's pretty replaceable. It would have been a whole lot better if they had traded him a long time ago and gotten something in return, but this is not Babe Ruth in his prime.
How good was Russell in 2016?
Mediocre.
I think 16...
Well, 2016 was his good year. Yeah, the past two years.
How instrumental was he in us winning the World Series?
Pretty damn instrumental. I mean, he had 95 RBIs that year. Mm-hmm.
He had a good series, didn't he? Didn't he play well in the postseason?
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember.
Had a couple homers in the postseason.
He had a home run in Game 6 of the World Series, hit a home run in the NLCS when the Cubs were trailing 2-1 in the series.
Yeah, and let's to your point, John, let's not completely overlook that it does absolutely matter how good of a player... they are, right? I realize Kareem Hunt was just cut, but I would be surprised if he doesn't get picked up by another team. Joe Mixon, who is the running back for the Cincinnati Bengals, basically did a Ray Rice, full-blown, punched a girl in the face at a restaurant in college and got drafted in the second round. He full-blown cold-clocked a female in a restaurant. It was caught on video.
You can find this.
And he was drafted in the second round. So it does matter where you are in your career and how good of a player you are.
So guys, talk about Aroldis Chapman then.
Yeah, there you go.
But,
the guy throws 105 miles per hour, you know?
Right.
And I remember that was when the Cubs were trying to have this squeaky clean, we're this family-friendly organization.
We were.
Then they traded for Aroldis Chapman. And I'm like, okay, this is the same pro sport, just the same as just about every other pro sports team.
And I said it at the time, too, not that it should matter, but you just traded for a guy who fired 8 shots in a garage in some really weird scenario, was suspended for a month.
What are we talking about?
We're talking about Chapman. And so you just traded for this guy, and most likely, if you win the World Series, it didn't quite turn out that way with the rain, he's going to be the guy that's on the mound. That's the closer. That's the guy who's going to be raising his hands.
He's going to be in the videos.
Right. it's not a pinch hitter. It's the closer in the ninth inning of, you know, he ended up obviously not being there in Game 7 because Mike Montgomery gets to have that little roll with the little roller to Chris Bryant as the Cubs rallied and Chapman blew it. But by the way,
this is a complete tangent, but when Chris Bryant feels that ball and he starts smiling because he knows he's just won the World Series, did you have a micro panic? You're going, dude, you've got to make the throw.
Also,
you're already mentally celebrating. Don't do that.
When you watch that video over and over, his left foot is slightly sliding on the wet turf that progresses. It's like, whoa, that ball could have sailed right over it. Anthony Rizzo.
You haven't made the throw yet. We're the Cubs, for God's sakes.
I was next to Kevin Powell in Cleveland.
It was. And I looked at the, I've said this multiple times on the air, the look on Carmen's face was just...
relief.
It was relief, more than anything.
more than joy.
He was just sort of flopped on his chair. Well, like all this weight had finally been lifted off his shoulders after his...
There's
so
a little
years.
Black cat on my TV, literally as that ball was rolling to third. So back to then the news click, which asked over the weekend, are you glad that the Cubs are offering a contract to Addison Russell? If in fact they do give him a contract and he plays for the Cubs next year, I presume the fans will be pretty forgiving about this or forgetful about this.
Yep, they'll have a. I would bet when he came to the plate for the first time, it would be silence. But the first time he gets, and maybe a moderate applause, but the first time he gets a base hit, we've seen this over and over and over again. The cheers will come.
Yeah, but you make that sound. You sound cynical about that. And I just entertain both of you for a moment. The notion that here's a young man who's obviously got issues, I'll say troubled. Wouldn't it be nice if he rehabilitated himself, made a contribution to his team, to his life, to his family? To, you know, I mean, look at it as a positive thing the Cubs are doing, too.
I'm with you there. And we talked about this Friday, John, that I do appreciate the fact that they continue to say the right things about his... You know, as right as you can say in a situation like this, that they do want to be a part of the solution. I appreciate that. But I still don't think Addison Russell's playing for the Cubs next year.
Yeah, but also because he's just not worth the risk.
There's
right?
that. There's if, that. If he was coming off an MVP campaign, I could bet every penny I own back. That he would be back. Yeah. Despite, you know, I give Chiefs a hell of a lot of credit for doing what they did. I mean, I realized the video was out there, and really, what else could they do? But they did it. They didn't waste any time. They cut the guy.
I think the Chiefs, I'm sorry, are we all saying then that for any of these transgressions, your current employer has to fire you and somebody else can hire you, but
right.
they can't hire? I mean, what do you do with those guys? I'm not sure that the Chiefs aren't going to regret that decision.
I think it happened on your watch. You and by the way, the Chiefs have a long history of enabling guys.
Tyreek Hill is currently on the roster.
Larry Johnson was arrested 5 different times under the Clark Hunt Kansas City Chiefs, and they kept on bringing him back to the team. I mean, just
you Google Tyreek Hill.
So
look what he did years ago.
To me, hey, let's take a little look at who we are, and we're going to try to help this young man, and by the way, help our organization at the same time. Try to make it as much of a win-win as possible.
Okay.
Can we talk about the Bears?
Bears.
Yeah, we're out of time, guys.
Damn it.
Well, I'll tell you what. You guys want to say something about the Bears, and for that matter, the Bulls? I'll give you a minute, in a minute, on WGN. You hear Mark Carmen talk a lot of sports on WGN radio on the weekends, sometimes with Harry Tynowitz, and you hear him all kinds of different ways. And Kevin Powell's in the sports booth down the hall. So we talked about the news click over the weekend and the Cubs tendering a contract to Addison Russell. 18 seconds, go. Give me your thoughts about the Bears game.
That was unfortunate and makes the season a whole lot harder. Get Mitchell Trubisky back on the field now.
Oh, by the way, before you go, Kevin, hey, Aleph, you need to do the news click for us and we'll get these guys' response. Go ahead, Kevin.
Despite the turnovers, despite the poor play at the quarterback spot, despite the defensive struggles in the second half, they still almost won that game. And Mitch Trubisky needs to play if they're going to win anything. That's... of value, any championships.
Turns out our kicker isn't so terrible after all. He made all of his kicks, and he somehow got that onside kick through. I mean, we're not even having this conversation, but for the onside kick.
Go Cody Parkey.
Man, how much angst must the Giants players, coaches, and fans have had? Because that game was won, and they almost gave it away.
You don't see that. I mean, you just don't.
That's not how
a double reverse whatever after the onside kick.
Should they have gone for the 2-point conversion? Should the Bears have gone for the 2.1 at regulation?
I wouldn't know.
Isn't that what you do on the road? Mm. I mean, and besides, what do you
care? They had all the momentum at that point. I was shocked to see the way they played in overtime. After that Barkley carry right off the get-go, I guess that kind of sucked all their momentum away. But I thought when they went to OTS, there's no way they're losing this game.
I thought the same thing. And I thought, well, then where's this offense from the Giants coming from? I thought we owned them in the second half.
Giants have been playing better football as of late.
Look, they've been in every game this year except for one against the Eagles in like week 5. Other than that, they've been in just about every single game. We knew this wasn't going to be an easy one. And lost, true.
What was that, Steve?
I said they've been in just about every game and lost.
That's true. There's no reason to overreact to this game. I'll just say that. They almost won on the road against an okay team. I realize they only had three wins, but there's no reason to overreact to this loss.
I'm pro-overreaction.
Here's the news click. Producer Elif, what's the news click, please?
What did we learn about the Bears on Sunday? A, that we're fine. I'm not worried. B, that we're fine, but I'm a little worried. C, we're not that good after all.
Are you going to go on that?
Is anybody going C? There's definitely got to be some cynical Bears fans out there.
You guys were just fretting over almost losing the World Series 3 years ago. So I'm sure there are paranoid fans out there.
Well, where are you, Steve? So what's your attitude about the Bears now? What did we learn? Are we fine? This is an aberration?
When's the last time you saw a Bears team that could score the way they did when they needed to in the fourth quarter?
Right. It always felt impossible in those moments, right? It almost felt like there was no chance they were ever going to come back and do something like they did yesterday. But this is, after yesterday's loss, despite the loss, they're still a top three team in the NFC.
What was C?
Huh?
What was C on the category? They're in deep, deep trouble.
Deep doo-doo. They're awful.
We're not that good.
I'm going to go, can I go B minus?
That's kind of, so in other words, we're really not as good
as our record. This is so Carmen. I knew Carmen would go this way.
We're not as good as our record makes us look. Is that what you're saying?
Well, they could be, by the way, 11-1. I mean,
Green Bay,
Miami,
yeah.
The Giants, and the other loss is New England. Yeah. That
but
was
they're still in
loss.
First place.
Okay. All right. Well, you can vote with your mouse at WGNradio.com. Thank you, Kevin. Mark Harmon, thanks for coming in.
Thanks, John.
It's Christmas time, but I'm not in the mood. I'm thinking immigration and trade and not about fun things like, well, I can't even remember fun things.
We know what this is.
My soul feels like Charlie Brown's tree.
This is a classic case of politosis, that dreary feeling you get from too much politics.
I wish there was something I could take, you know, before noon.
Now there is. Eurylium Life 9000.
That's a vodka, too?
It's not a vodka.
Darn.
It's an all-new wonder drug handcrafted by an ethnically blended group of serious-looking people wearing lab coats. In New Jersey.
I want to forget all this political news and...
It'll do that.
Lighten my mood.
It's inexpensive, easy to take, and will put a smile on your face.
Oh, it is vodka.
Take Eurylium Life 9000 as a pill, capsule, gel cap, IV, eye drop, nasal mist, ear burst, arm patch, tonic, colonic, seltzer. There's an all-new home epidural kit, and now take it as a gummy bear, candy cane, or sea salt briquette.
Should I take Eurylium Life 9000 if I'm pregnant or plan on getting pregnant? Like, who'd want to get pregnant these days? Did I say I'm kind of down right now?
Don't take it then.
I'll get a Eurylium Life 9000 mistletoe and hang it by the door.
Happy holidays from Eurylium Life 9000 and Eurylium Light 4500.
And some Cosmos. I'm still going to have my Cosmos.
It's not a vodka. It's Eurylium Life 9000 is not a vodka, for crying out loud. It's 2:38 on WGN. This is not a political note, but Steve Bertrand continues to follow the ceremonies around President Bush's trip back home. The 21-gun salute, Air Force One. I'm watching the video online right now, too.
Yeah, it's not to be Cliff Clavin, but it's technically not Air Force One. It's only Air Force One when the president's on it.
Oh, no kidding. I didn't realize the distinction.
And I think they're calling this one the Mission 41 or something like that.
It really is a magnificent plane, and to see it on the tarmac and to know what's happening about it, it's big.
You know what, John? I was just had the exact same thoughts, because until you see vehicles or people next to it, you don't realize it. You know, and then I've never seen it. I'd love to see just how big it is.
The shot they have on CNN, well, I think this one does not look like, not this particular plane, but I think it's a 747. It's that big of a plane, but... whatever it is, the shot on CNN right now is a long view. So you really do see it. It's in its entirety. You see some, you know, SUVs parked nearby, but it's kind of over there. So there's a little distance. Maybe that's a Marine Corps band. There's a band that's marching up to it now. There's just a lot of ceremony
about
this right now. Go ahead, Steve.
So that's as they prepare to take the president's casket from the plane.
Yeah, so they're marching into place now. And there is just the ceremony that he and it all deserves. It's being handled well.
I really want to throw your funeral next week. Did you hear me say that in,
no, I didn't
in the intercom?
That. My funeral.
I just feel like you should hear the good things we have to say about you because I'm, you know, George wasn't always, I mean, they're just everything is just so glowing and kind and everything. And
yeah, it'd be nice if he were here to hear this.
It would be.
It was interesting.
He would appreciate it more than most of us.
Well, they asked his son how he felt about the criticism that his father took, and was that painful? And he said, yeah, it was.
Yeah.
And dad told son, you know, you're going to get this too. Be ready for that. Heck, Clinton told him that as well. I mean, all of them sort of prepped the other one for, you know, be strong. And he told that to Clinton. He said, you know, it's going to be hard at times, but you're the president and I'm going to be rooting for you. His letter to Bill Clinton was utterly elegant.
Right. I hope you succeed because if you succeed, the country succeeds.
You know what I also thought about, too, over the weekend, Steve, was how he died 8 months after his wife did.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd been married 73 years. People that age are going to die pretty soon anyway, but there's this phenomenon of people who follow the death of a spouse fairly quickly.
And I think they were extraordinarily close, too.
They say it's not happenstance, that there are medical reasons for what they describe as broken heart syndrome.
You probably don't remember, but in the it might have been within a week of Barbara Bush's services, Ryan, who works here with ABC, was flown down to Houston because the president was hospitalized. And people thought then that, oh, this is it.
Well, maybe that explains this, because Time magazine wrote about this phenomenon over the weekend, and they said, with broken heart syndrome, the stress is so great that the chemicals affect the heart such that it fails to contract normally. The heart assumes an abnormal shape. Talk about literally having a broken heart, which leads to decreased blood flow to the coronary arteries and to the rest of the body. It's not always fatal. Maybe that's what 41 was going through at the time. But it can be. Broken heart syndrome doesn't necessarily strike right after a spouse dies either. Memories and dreams occurring in the weeks and months after a spouse's death may be jarring enough to trigger the stress response then. The condition also has been known to affect those who have lost a child, potentially including Debbie Reynolds, who died a day after her daughter Carrie Fisher in 2016. Close friends, even a beloved pet. If you suffer something that breaks your heart, your body is going to react physiologically differently. Broken heart syndrome is often reversible, too. That is, you can get over it. You can be well. And men are particularly likely to suffer health consequences as a result of an upheaval like this, more so than women. And if you think about that, that almost makes sense, doesn't it? Men suffer more from broken heart syndrome than do women. So there is that in the news. There's another story we wanted to get to before we get done today. By the way, we began the show today just mentioning how our weekends were and what we all did. I said that I think, because it's such a commitment, don't hold me to this, but I think I'm going to rewatch all of the Game of Thrones in order, starting season one, episode one. I'm on season one, episode three or four now. Just, you know, start plowing through them. It's just so much fun.
When's it coming back?
I'm
Is
not
it the
sure.
spring or?
You know, that show is never coming back anytime soon. Well, let's look that up. When is Game of Thrones come back? I don't know that it's 2019. It could be 2020. It's amazing.
Really?
It's amazing how much staying power some of these shows have. They can take a year and a half off, and people are ready for it day one. It helps that you can watch things on demand these days. John, here's some advice on watching Game of Thrones for those of you watching it for the first time. Don't get too attached to anyone. The first two episodes, you go, holy cow, how can you guys have a show? Oh, everyone's dying.
So, John, you've seen it, right?
Yeah, I knew, but that's a good point. Yeah. I mean, there's such great characters in the first two episodes, and one of them isn't going to be around. I'm just saying.
Maybe in April 2019, you'll find out who that is.
April. Okay, April. Wow, 2019, but 2019, yeah.
Well, that's next year, so no pressure, but you're going to want to be done with the other seasons, right?
I'm plowing through it. Earlier in the show, we also talked about weddings and the fact that Nick Jonas and Chopra, what's her first name?
Priyanka.
Priyanka Chopra got married and registered on Amazon. I still think that's just like if Brenda and I were millionaires, if I was Nick Jonas and she was that other lady, I don't think we would have registered on Amazon for gifts. I just think that's a little unseemly when you're that well-to-do.
Well, and I don't think that any of the gifts that they requested are crazy expensive, so I think it's okay.
I don't even know what the right gifts are. My problem is that they registered at all, not the value of them, because, first of all, I don't think they need flatware or a Cuisinart. I think that's a commercial embedded in their registry, and we're all suckers for it.
Well, and you know that because at the end it said that the money, Amazon had donated money.
To UNICEF. In her name, $100,000.
Right.
$100,000, so that's nice.
We'll donate this money if you say you registered with us.
But that's an inexpensive ad campaign, then. For $100,000, Amazon gets a viral commercial.
A half an hour of your show.
Think of the tens of listeners that are
who want blenders now.
I think a registry is a gift to the guests, though.
Say that again, Steve.
A registry is a gift to the guests. I mean, they still have family who are going to probably buy them gifts or give them gifts. And so this is, you know...
Do you show up to a wedding with the blender wrapped up? Or is it like...
Mostly you don't anymore. That used to happen. People would bring gifts to weddings, but not so much anymore.
I think now you can just have it shipped to the person's address.
You don't even see it or touch it. You just go online, hit send, and it's done. It's very clean. You don't have to wrap it, nothing.
I was going through someone's registry, and it was very expensive. And I thought I was going to buy them these plates. I was looking at everything. I'm like, I can only afford, like, one plate.
Yeah. Well, and
yeah.
And
you have to buy all four.
I'm like, I can't.
But
I can't do that.
And again, I know people who, a lot of my kids' friends are getting married now, so some of them and their families are listening, and please don't hold me to any of this. But I also think it's weird that you can make a donation to a fund to help them have money for their honeymoon.
Well, but instead of getting a blender, I would like a really nice honeymoon.
Who am I to judge, right? It's 6 1/2 dozen. It's my money going to you to use any way you want. And so why do I think a blender is more appropriate than a nice honeymoon? But it's just...
It might go a step further, though, where I could understand what you're saying. If there's almost like a GoFundMe for the wedding.
Well, it's starting to feel like that.
Right.
John, we went to a wedding a few years ago where the couple registered for bed sheets way over $1,000 a set.
Whoa!
We gave them a $150 check.
At least you have the option of giving a check.
Yeah.
Don't do cash.
Do they do that anymore? Do people show up with... I think some people still give cash.
An envelope, right?
Well, Serbian tradition, you just give it right in their hand.
Or on the garter belt during the dance. Do you do that?
I don't think you should touch the bride, no.
Back in the day, they would do a... What was it? She would sit on the chair.
They would take the garter off with their teeth, right?
Yeah.
There's no money involved in that.
I guess not. It's just tacky, that's all.
That's the groom, though,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, not everybody at the wedding.
But
hopefully. Yeah.
But still. Okay, back to some... President Bush comments. John, I saw a clip of an interview with President Bush this weekend. He said that if Barbara preceded him, she's the first one he'd like to see in heaven. He then listed his parents, their daughter, Robin. It brought tears to my eyes. They lost their daughter at the age of 3. And I hadn't thought about that until the obits. You know, he lost, you know, he's like such a great classic American story. If you were going to say build a president, you would do this. Give me a war hero, you know, blah blah blah. And he was all of that. He was all of that. I was also interested to see what would happen with the current president and all of this. And I'm glad that the president will be able to attend the funeral, and you know, the whatever bad blood existed between the Trumps and the presidents, it's not percolating up here. And that is the way the president wanted it. Yeah, so lots of thoughts along those lines today. There was a story, we talked about bringing this topic up here, Aleph. Maybe I'll just mention it and then we'll get to it tomorrow. But it's about the ideal age. The ideal age. I like this. Hey, John Williams, I drive seniors for a living. And one lady on the bus took her hat off her head and put it on the head of a Salvation Army bell ringer. The ringer was an 80-something-year-old woman ringing the bell in the freezing cold with no hat. Now that's the kind of people to help. not people who have no worries in the world. Okay, thank you for that email or text message. Hey, are you hosting for the holidays? Get your carpets cleaned and looking new again. Call the pros at Executive Green Carpet Cleaning today. You'll be scheduled before Christmas. They're the best value in town. Executive Green's unique process leaves your carpet cleaner, softer, and drier. They're certified by the Green Clean Institute. Get three rooms cleaned for just $139. Call 630-990-8600, 630-990-8600, or schedule online at executivegreencarpetcleaning.com. Did you guys follow the story about this Dutch motivational speaker, Emil Radebland?
Yeah. I just Remind was hoping me. Someone would say something, and they didn't, so I thought I would help you out there.
69 years old, but he went to court to change his age to 49. He's 69, but he tried to have his age legally changed to 49 because he said he really feels 49. He is a 49-year-old. The court has said this: Mr. Radebland is at liberty to feel 20 years younger than his real age and to act accordingly. But amending his date of birth would cause 20 years of records to vanish from the register of births, deaths, marriages, registered partnerships. This would have a variety of undesirable legal and societal implications. He went to court last month, arguing that he didn't feel 69, and said his request was consistent with other forms of personal transformation, which are gaining acceptance in the Netherlands and around the world. He said people can change their name and people can change their gender. So why can't I change my age?
This is like the ultimate midlife crisis.
Or third quarter life crisis.
69.
Well, yeah. Whatever. You can have your midlife crisis whenever. I had a mid-20s crisis. I mean, it happens.
I look at this as, to me, the nice thing about this story for me is a person who's not 60 yet, if somebody at 69 can say, hey, I feel 49, then what's so scary about turning 60, right, or 50 or whatever? You know, you two are bad ones to talk to about this. Judy Pilak is over there. She's real old. What I think is
hey,
more...
Hey, I want to be back to talk about this, too. I don't know what you mean.
What's the best age? If in your life so far, if you could be an age, what would it be? And I guarantee it wouldn't be 26.
No.
No.
Probably my 30s or 40s.
Yeah.
I don't know. Now is pretty good, too.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
I mean, you and I went to school together, and I don't have any problems with being the age that I am. And yeah. By the way, I can't walk as easily as I did. I can feel my knees and back and stuff that you start to feel when you're older. And I don't like that. But
no, you're in financial, worse shape than I am.
Financial stability
is nice.
Gives you freedom.
Not having the
freedom,
uncertainty yeah. of like, because when you're 30, I'll tell you, when you're 30, you got stuff to do, man.
There's too many options.
Oh, there's too many responsibilities. There's too many unknowns. The problem with being in your 30s and 40s is there's a lot of pressure there.
Mm-hmm.
You've got kids. Are we going to have enough money to go to school? Are they going to go to school? Are they going to go to jail? Are they going to drink? What are they going to, you know, it's just all of that. And when you're 59.
Wait, hold
that
on.
That is not a problem.
And if what it is, you don't care.
Right, yeah, and by the way, it's
that, you know, that's what I love, this new sense of... I will say whatever I want, whatever right. I want.
Right. So being older or younger, like way younger, was fun too.
It was. I mean, none of them, I didn't have a bad 20s, but I didn't have as much. Think about it this way. Judy, are you this way? I'm having more fun in my 50s than I did in my 20s.
Kind of, yeah. But I was an older mom. I think you were a younger dad, right?
Younger than you, yeah.
Yeah, so my kids were a little bit... So when I say 30s, they were still pretty little in 30 and 40s. And now I just paid off my last semester of college.
Oh, wow.
And that, it's huge.
You are out of college jail.
Oh, I know.
That is
Thank
the best
you. I
feeling
know,
in
right?
the world.
No probation. I'm going right past go.
Wow.
Yeah, so you're oof, right. Oof. I just... It's a whole new feeling. Of, ooh, relief.
But this guy's a ding-a-ling. It's like, dude, you're 69. Own it. You know, and by the way, if I'm 69 and I'm changing my age, I'm going to 29. Who are we getting here? It's 2:56. The stories that matter in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Judy will have that and more coming up on GN.